Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producers today are Jamie Lasante and Lou Pellegrino. And this is the Monday Sports Media Roundtable right after what was a very, very exciting Super Bowl game. The Eagles prevailing over the Patriots in a game that went down to the last minute. My three guests this week are Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated is in studio with me. Chad Finn, the sports media writer of the Boston Globe, is in Minneapolis. And we have a new member of the Sports Media Roundtable, Rob Littal. He is the founder and editor of Black Sports Online, and he is in Minneapolis as well. Guys, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, Jimmy, you're so excited. I mean, just try to control your enthusiasm here in studio.
Thank you for having me. Richard.
You're welcome. There you go. Let's start with Rob and Chad because they were both at the game. Rob, just initial thoughts. First of all, give listeners a sense of where you watched the game, where you were, and what it was like to be in that stadium. Obviously, we're going to talk a lot about the broadcast, but I'd be curious to just from your perspective as a media person and Chad's perspective as a media person, what was it like inside that stadium?
Well, I was in the Eagles end zone in the media section. And honestly, the first thing that I could really tell is that this was the Eagles fans, the Eagles players were so excited. I mean, they were really, really into it. It almost felt like a home game for the Eagles. And the Patriots side had that feel of that been there, done that. So it was definitely a different, dynamic. You had the Eagles coming out to Meek Mill, Dreams and Nightmares. It was just a different vibe from the Eagles side, from their players, from the music, from their fans, than the Patriots side, which is, hey, we've been to all of these Super Bowls. We know what's going to happen. It was very business-like from the Patriots in, even with their fans. And I've been to a couple of Super Bowls with the Patriots in it. Their fans, you know, are very passionate, but they just had this kind of business-like perspective. And it gave like almost like a college basketball tournament type of feel when the underdog, even though the Eagles wasn't that big of an underdog, is going up against Duke. You know what I mean? It had that type of feel, to it, for me at least.
Chad, I know there are a lot of 14-year-olds in the Boston area heartbroken over finally losing a championship in their lifetime. It must have just been an interesting experience as part of the Boston media corps. For one, you guys aren't necessarily loose to covering so many losing teams over the last couple decades. So from your vantage, it was a great game to watch if you liked offensive football from home. What was your takeaway from being inside the stadium?
Yeah, Rob, I saw it exactly the way Rob did, actually. I think we're even pretty much in the same section. It was, every Patriots writer is trying to put a percentage on it all night, but I would say it was at least 2/3 Eagles fans, and they were much louder than Patriots fans were. You heard the Patriots fans when Brady led them down with about 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter to go ahead for the first time, but the other, 57 minutes of the game or whatever it was, it felt like a Philadelphia home game. And for all the times that the Patriots have been here, three times in the last 4 years, and the couple that they lost to the Giants in between their previous 3-4 that they won, it never felt like this. It felt 50-50 or maybe a little bit tilted to the underdog, to the team that they were playing. But this felt like Patriots fans didn't really travel very well. And maybe it's because Philadelphia, has been waiting a long time for another championship since the Phillies about 10 years ago. But it was a Eagles home game, and I don't know if that had any effect, but it certainly was noticeable in U.S. Bank Stadium. And the thing we're writing about today is why Bill Belichick didn't play Malcolm Butler. It's beyond a mystery. He obviously wasn't very forthcoming, but you go on Instagram last night, and Brandon Browner, who when the Patriots beat Seattle in the Super Bowl, was the guy who leveled the Seattle receiver to allow Butler to step in and make that interception. He ripped Belichick on Instagram last night, and current Patriot players, including one of the guys who replaced Butler on the field last night, liked that post. So there's something going on there. There's a variable that we haven't found out about yet about why Butler didn't play. But He took a guy, Belichick took a guy who played 98% of the snaps this year and didn't give him one on defense in the Super Bowl against a team that backup quarterback threw for, led an offense of over 500 yards against them. There's something missing here, and I think it's going to come out because the Patriots teammates are pretty upset about this.
Really interesting, and that's going to lead us perfectly into the game broadcast. I'm going to let you three go. I'm going to try to stay out of this. I just posted a piece. You can read that. I talked to Fred Godelli last night around 11 o'clock and try to get some answers for people about, you know, would NBC consider a ruse analyst, just given how much catch, no catch stuff was there and the fact that Michaels and Collinsworth were off on their stuff. One of the things, and Jimmy, I know you were not a fan of the broadcast, so I'll get to you first. One of the things that was interesting, and Chad brought up about Malcolm Butler, Jimmy, and we both watched this, is I thought they were really slow on just giving it. Hold on one second. It was a major, major story. They let people know in the first quarter that he wasn't playing, but then went away for a long time. And then finally, I think it was the second quarter, mentioned that it was a coach's decision. Michaels had a good line about you can't get injury stuff out of the Patriots because it's like East Germany. But that story was never really – maybe that nobody from NBC to Foy, et cetera, could get it, but that story was not – covered at all. So that's my preamble, Jimmy, to you were very vocal on Twitter last night saying you did not think it was a good broadcast.
No.
Why?
Well, first things first, I can't kill them for the Malcolm Butler thing because, like, you're not going to get information out of the Patriots on that. And I don't know what nobody knew that story until they threw it up there on the game telecast. I'll tell you where this is just amazing in the Twitter era that we live in. They had the news about Brandon Cooks not coming, being out for the rest of the game, 15 minutes after Twitter. That's one where I thought NBC did it. NBC has to know that immediately. You can't, that news can't be on Twitter for 15 minutes before Michelle Tafoya comes on to say that. And then, I mean, the performance during the replays was embarrassing.
Okay, why do you say? Let me just play a little devil's advocate. Should the broadcasters get it right? Like, don't we just want them to offer their opinion? And if their opinion turns out to be wrong on their,
well, here's the thing though. Go ahead. I'm actually writing my column as we tape this, and the whole thing is about how Collinsworth was adamant the Ertz thing was going to be overturned, and there was no chance it was going to be overturned because the rule was he became a runner after he makes the catch and gets two steps. So there was no, and then of course he crossed the plane of the goal line. There was no chance that wasn't. I think what's happened is they're so used to now everything being replayed that they're outsmarting themselves. You don't have to sit there and be adamant. You can let it breathe and say, listen, I think this is going to happen. Who knows? We'll see what happens. You don't have to talk for the entire replay and just say things to say things. That's what it felt like.
Rob, did you and Chad were at the game, but as you told me prior to us taping, you both had earpieces, so you heard the broadcast. I'd be interested in your top line thoughts on what you thought of the broadcast, and then we can go into the specifics of the Clement and Ertz catches, because obviously that seemed to be more than anything else on social media. NBC really took a pounding for that.
You know, I think what Jimmy said about social media now is that now the broadcasters are critiqued like the coaches and the players.
Yeah, real time.
Like, from, you know, if I tweet, like, as soon as I saw Cooks get hit, I tweet, hey, he's gone, it's over, he's not coming, you know, he's coming back. You know, maybe that's a freedom that you have now on social media, whereas, you know, you're taught in journalism, hey, wait until you get the official word. And say, but not now. You can't do that now. You got to say, hey, I saw the hit. This is what happens. He's looking wobbly. He's probably not coming back. And I think, you know, sometimes with announcers, old school announcers, and these guys have been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years, they're kind of stuck in their ways. And I think NBC is a little stuck in their ways. And they announced the game old school, but this is a new school audience. So that's why, you know, sometimes I'm like, I can't listen to these guys because I can get the information faster other places. So I think the critiques come from the fact that, and I'm not saying Collinsworth doesn't know his stuff or Michaels doesn't know his stuff. Obviously, they work very hard, but sometimes they just seem clueless about some of the things that are happening. And I don't know if that's because they're in the broadcast booth and they're not getting the information that they should be getting. But, you know, something like the catch, the no catch, what happened with Cooks, Malcolm Butler, it just seems that their stream of information in the broadcast booth is a lot poorer than what we're getting online in real time. And until they can kind of merge that together or embrace it, you know, hey, we saw this on Twitter. We saw an Instagram post. Like, until they embrace it, I think it's always going to be a problem for those old school style broadcasters.
It's interesting, Chad, as I go to you, because Rob brings up a good point. This is like a an issue for production trucks all over the place, as you know, how much to incorporate what is going on in the social media world versus obviously you got a broadcast in front of you. You have to focus on that. You don't want to be a prisoner to places like Twitter or Facebook. At the same time, you have to acknowledge when something's going on. Chad, the one thing that I thought, and it's I probably did not do a great job in my write-up today, is I just thought the broadcast was I shouldn't say the broadcast, because I thought Gedeli and Esikoff behind the scenes, they got every photo. They were really good on like providing viewers with replays. The camera shots were tight. I thought Collinsworth and Michaels were just a tick off, whether it was Collinsworth smothering the broadcast a little bit or Michaels maybe just not providing the sort of energy enthusiasm for a game of that magnitude.
Might have got this flu thing. I at some point during the game, I said, I wonder if they've got this flu thing.
It's interesting because that was my take, Chad, is that, and again, I can't, I probably didn't do a great job of explaining that in the piece I wrote today, but I just felt like for the broadcast, that's the, that is definitely the best broadcast out there. There was, they were off their game slightly, and they're usually not off their game. And I think that's what stood out to me. How did you see it, Chad?
Maybe Michaels get tired of calling touchdowns. I think there was only one punt in the whole game, so maybe it just wore him out. He's not a young fella anymore. But I agree with that. I thought it was pretty subdued, especially on Al's side. Collinsworth was interesting because at one point, it was the Ertz touchdown. He says, I give up, after it was ruled a touchdown and his prediction that it would be overturned was incorrect. I talked to him maybe a week ago, and I was looking for my notes here, but I can't find them. But I talked to him about the catch thing, and he was asked by the NFL to be part of a committee that would revisit this after the season, and apparently they're into it now. They're having discussions about what's going to constitute a catch going forward, how to adjust all these stupid abstract parts of the rule that leave everybody bewildered about what's a catch and what isn't. And he couldn't do it because of preparations for this game or the championship game, whatever they called before this. I think it was a couple weeks ago. But he was someone whose opinion the NFL wants in determining how they're going to correct this. And so it was kind of jarring to hear him last night when he was wrong just sort of say, well, I give up on this. Because he's someone who has a voice in this. And I think it just sort of that comment sort of fell into the entire broadcast, which was just, you know, it was a level below what we expect out of those guys. And generally, they're as good as it gets. For whatever reason, last night, they weren't quite their usual selves.
Jimmy, and Rob and Chad, you can certainly weigh in after Jimmy goes. Jimmy, one of the things that Fred Gedeli said to me last night, which I thought was interesting, was when I asked him, like, did last night's game give you any kind of pause in terms of bringing in a rules analyst heading forward, a Pereira type, a Blandino type? He said no. He doesn't want to take the analysis out of Chris's hands, which I thought was interesting just given how much praise Pereira has seemed to gotten for Fox. Obviously, it didn't work with Mike Carey and CBS. But that was interesting to me that I would have thought that maybe he would have given me an answer like, yeah, it's maybe something to consider heading forward. But he was happy. He was fine with Collinsworth ultimately, you were saying, being wrong on his analysis because he wants him to make a judgment.
But you can have a rules analyst and not have him on camera. I mean, you can have a rules analyst to feed them information in their headsets.
Well, there's a rules analyst in the booth.
About what Chad said. For Collinsworth to then say, I give up after that.
Yeah.
Chris, what are you giving up on? The rule is very clear. He made the catch. He took two steps. He became a runner. He dove, crossed the plane. The ball then hit the ground. What are you giving up on? That is not a controversial one. He made it controversial. It wasn't. That's on him. So I give up. But that's your problem.
Rob, when you watch the commercials afterwards, to me, the best commercial/spot for the entire broadcast was Eli and Odell Beckham Jr. Doing a Dirty Dancing remake. Anything to you stand out in terms of what we saw either in the commercials or even Timberlake's halftime performance?
You know, my audience is, you know, a little bit different than some of the other audience. And yes, yeah, I think the Giants won with Eli and OBJ was obviously very good, but I thought there was more discussion, real discussion, about the Martin Luther King Dodge Ram one. A lot of rock eyebrows were raised about that. It obviously they had permission from Martin Luther King's family to do that. But it to me, what has happened to Martin Luther King over the years is a lot of pandering. Like, you know, when people that, you know, maybe racist, maybe prejudiced, want to like have an out, they say, oh, well, Martin Luther King wouldn't have did this, or what would MLK say? What about all? And it's become one of those type of things where people have forgotten a lot of what Martin Luther King was really all about and what he sacrificed. And honestly, the fact that, you know, hey, you know, the reason he's not here is because he was assassinated and shot in the head. It wasn't a pretty ending to sell Dodge, you know, trucks. Now, you know, maybe the money goes to somewhere, you know, good. That's great. Obviously, the Timberlake thing has carried over from the time that we found out about the hologram. There was the Janet Jackson appreciation hashtag that was trending for a long time on top of the Super Bowl until Kylie Jenner and the Kardashians hijacked that with a baby. I think what we're seeing is that, and this is just my opinion, is that the game, yes, the game is great. We all love watching football, but the conversations are about things that are happening around the game. Like, that's what more people are talking about. Yeah, you know, great catches, nice run, but we're talking about Eli. We're talking about Prince. We're talking about Kylie Jenner having a baby. We're talking about Tom Brady's, you know, baby mama congratulating and complimenting Nick Foles. That was actually the biggest story that I did yesterday. Out of the 50 stories that we did regarding the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's baby mama tweeting Nick Foles was the biggest story. And that just kind of tells me that when a big event happens, people are not just watching for the event. They're watching for any controversy or viral things that happen around the event. And that's kind of where we're at as a society in 2018.
It took 161 episodes of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, but we finally had our first Kylie Jenner reference. Thanks, Rob. Took a long time, but finally we have we've broken that landing. And Rob, you make an interesting point. We won't get into it, but it's always, man, the freaking line in terms of like trying to thread it when you're selling somebody like Martin Luther King's words, Bobby Kennedy's words, you know, or Churchill or whoever into selling product. That is a fine line that usually ends up the wrong way. And that ad should be discussed today. Even if the King of State approved that stuff, that's always tricky. Jimmy, did you want to say something?
Oh yeah, the best thing is, I don't even know if people know this. I didn't watch every single commercial, so I don't know if they said this on a commercial, but I know it's out there. They because it was announced either yesterday or today. That now Doritos is making a chip for women, so that will also be a phenomenal story to follow. It's supposed to have no crunch, so it's for women.
Jesus, that's going to end. That'll end badly as well. Chad, is there anything before we get to the rating? Anything else in the broadcast that you wanted to highlight, either in terms of that you thought NBC did really, really well, or that maybe NBC that something lacking on the broadcast?
Well, you know what? The Timberlake reference, it just reminded me of Collinsworth toward the end of the game.
Oh my God, he's selling the soap there.
Jeez.
Yeah, he shoehorned in like a reference, like this game has been as great as Timberlake's performance at halftime or something like that. Where did that come from? First of all, Timberlake, at least in the building, it was about as bland as you could possibly be. Just didn't seem like really caught anyone's attention in the way. You know, I remember the Katy Perry one was a huge success, and you can kind of get a sense for that. Didn't seem like he connected with the audience at all, and yet Collinsworth is there at the end of the game plugging the halftime performance in one of the most thrilling Super Bowl games of all time. And it was kind of reminiscent of the Patriots-Seattle Super Bowl, where Seattle's got the best defense in football at that point. Patriots are down 10 in the fourth quarter, and Collinsworth starts in on the dialogue about Deflategate and going into detail on that when the game was really at its peak. And it just, it seems like sort of a weird thing that he does when the game is in its best moments. He starts, for some reasons, maybe just sort of a tick that he has, kind of goes off on a tangent about something else ancillarily related to the game. I found that reference to the halftime show late in the game really, really odd.
It's so funny to me sometimes when, like, sports broadcasters try to oversell, like, the musical act. Like, you know, you just got some broadcaster in there who's like, throw your hands in the air if you're a true player. Coming up, Notorious B.I.G.
In the first half, he was teasing Al about whether he was going to, like, perform with Timberlake, too.
Yeah, that for whatever reason, it was I'm with you, Chad. It was so jarring to hear Collinsworth, like, overhyping Timberlake, who does not need any overhyping, but that was strange. Lastly, Jimmy, we'll go. This is really for any of you guys, but since you're in the studio with me, Jimmy, and I'm turning to you here, the rating was down 3%. That just came out as we're taping this overnight. It'll project, it looks like, to the Anthony Krupes of Ad Age, the people who really are great at this every day, Austin Karp of SBJ, to 107 million to 110 million. When all is said and done, the way I look at this, given the NFL's viewership challenges this year, cord cutting, everything we've talked about, the viewership being way down again, 8%, I think that's a win for the league. To be down 3% only from last year, I think turns out to be a pretty good rating. Obviously, there are going to be people out there saying, it's the lowest since 2010. The NFL is dying, blah, 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 blah. To go down 3% in a year where everything in linear television is down, I think if you're in the NFL and NBC, I think you got to be happy with that.
Plus, you have to consider the regular season. I mean, the regular season was down double digits. So
right.
If you're only down
3%. 9%. Right.
9%. So if you're only down 3% for the Super Bowl, I think this is a win for NBC.
Yeah.
And
bigger win for the league than NBC because
right.
they're moving on to the
right.
next broadcasters.
I'm sure, you know, they got monster ratings for This Is Us after the game. I'm sure Fallon did a monster rating.
Definitely.
At Timberlake and The Rock. So for the night, I'm sure NBC was thrilled. The NFL has to be happy. And if you can get in this day and age of cord cutting and streaming, because the game was streamed on NBC and Yahoo, you get a 3% dip. That's a win, as far as I'm concerned.
Rob, you're welcome to sort of offer your thoughts on that, or anything else from the broadcast to you that stood out.
I think there was a little Patriots fatigue, and I also think, you know, the Eagles aren't the most loved team in the world. Their fans are not the most loved fans. I think the most important thing, and you said this, is that there are so many options now to do besides just sit in front of a television that I just think ratings are down all over because of that. And I don't think I don't think the NFL is dying. I don't think. The Eagles had, you know, were first and one of the teams that had the most players on the front lines about police brutality and social injustice. Hey, guess what? It wasn't a distraction. They won the Super Bowl. So I think a lot of that is overplayed and overestimated and kind of a dog whistle. And yeah, I thought it was a good game. A lot of, you know, 100 million people watched. Everybody was talking about it on the timeline. You know, to me, it's the Super Bowl. And I mean, me and you can play in the Super Bowl and it'll probably get 50 million viewers. So, I mean, it's going to be all right. And a lot of this, you know, NFL is dying talk to me. It's just silly and just, you know, people needing something to talk about on social media.
Chad, do you want to know what my favorite tweet of this morning was? It was from my favorite sports studio show, Fox and Friends, where they said, the NFL season ends with all players on their feet as President Trump calls on Americans to stand for the national anthem. So it was fun when ESPN gets criticized all the time, you know, for politicizing or over-politicizing sports. Chad, I just want on Fox and Friends, I just want politics. Why do they take it back to sports, Chad? That's all I want. I want my politics. But to Rob's point, you know, If you want to push the when it comes to viewership, this is the thing we all, those of us who write about ratings, you know, on a daily or weekly basis, as Chad and I obviously do, you can spin this any way you want. For those who want to push that the NFL, it was being punished by people, you'll go to the it's down 3%. It The rating was, the lowest overnight since 2010. If you want to be more reasonable and look at the larger sort of overalls, as Jimmy said, 3% in a year where you were down 9% in the regular season is a win. Chad, one last thing before we get to we move on to another topic, because Rob said something interesting. You're in the middle of this in New England, but do you think there's any national Patriots fatigue? The interesting thing about like that kind of comment is there's never fatigue for the Cowboys. They're always the most polarizing team in the NFL, and the ratings always show there's no more viewed team in the National Football League than then. The Patriots, the Packers, the Giants, those are always great national type of teams that do well in the national windows. But it is interesting to think about. Do you think they're, because of the overwhelming success of the Pats, do you think we saw any kind of Pats fatigue this year, at least in this game?
There's Patriots fatigue when they win. There's a celebration in 31 other markets when they lose like they did last night. So I think there probably was some entering the game now. I think they just got a lot more interesting. Losing the game.
I agree.
Putting up 600-something yards of offense and losing. And then having, for them, what would qualify as chaos afterwards with Butler not playing, with some of his teammates subtly questioning that, with Rob Gronkowski dropping the bomb that he's considering maybe not playing after this season, with Tom Brady turning 41, I think it's in August, and a lot of the stuff and the Seth Wickersham ESPN story being not necessarily confirmed, but Robert Kraft acknowledging that there's tension with the Patriots. That's pretty close to a confirmation. I think Seth's probably feeling really good about what he wrote today. The Patriots are people are tired of seeing them winning. They lost last night, and they lost in a very frustrating way for their fan base. And so I think people are fans are across the country now looking at them saying, all right, they're not going to win in the last minute in another Super Bowl. And they've got a little bit of they've got some issues going on with this team. Suddenly, I'm a little bit more interested in what's going on there than watching them win and win and win again. It feels like things might change a little bit here for the Patriots, and I think fans everywhere else in the country are going to be watching that in a very curious way.
I would just like to say, Chad, no offense to you, I don't think people have an issue with the Patriots as much as they do with their fans. Their fans have become the worst in sports. So
I'm not arguing that.
Yeah, to me that was,
I love all New England fans because I need downloads on this podcast.
I found myself rooting for the Eagles just because of the Patriot fans, not because of the Patriot players. I actually like Brady and Belichick and Gronk and all them, but their fans have become by far the worst in sports with the conspiracy theories and the, you know, everyone's out to get us and everything's rigged.
Chad, who will be the first sports media member in the next week to proclaim that Tom Brady is done? Who will give us that gift?
Diana Rossini did it yesterday.
I feel like it's coming on some debate show here.
It always comes.
But to what Jimmy said, I agree with it. I mean, I wrote about Seth's story in the sense that I took the approach that no, ESPN isn't out to get you. They're not out to get you, Patriots fans. Yes, Mort screwed up Deflategate, and they didn't apologize for it, and there have been other things that ESPN has really screwed up along the way. But as I've written time and time again, ESPN employs Mike Reese, probably the most respected sports writer, let alone Patriots beat writer, in this market. It employs Field Yates, who breaks a lot of Patriots news and used to work for the Patriots. Used to be in the scout, I believe, in their front office. It employs Teddy Bruschi, who's one of the probably five most beloved Patriots of all time. And yet, people around here completely dismiss ESPN as the entity as out to get the Patriots. And it gets pretty absurd. And I do think that it's not entitlement with Patriots fans. It's this defend the wall, us against
paranoia
mentality, where they're pointing at them, and it's a much broader thing than it actually should be.
Yeah, it is a little crazy just in the sense that like there's been so much success that Boston-based teams have had, and there's still always going to be a group of fans in who root for those teams who think the world is against, and the world's not against you. You've won. I mean, people also respect and celebrate winning, but there's a big fan base that I agree with Jimmy. It's like a it's sort of a complex thinking that everybody's against them. Jimmy, do you want to say something?
No, I think it's funny that Patriots fans still to this day talk about Deflategate. Like at what point does this,
never
does
it's going to last our whole lifetime? You know. All right, let us move on from the Super Bowl. It's a fantastic conversation, but we must move on because Jamie Lasante, my producer, has fallen asleep. So maybe this will be a better topic. Jamele Hill has Jimmy, calm down.
I'm just saying you wanted Jamie to wake up, and then you.
Jamele Hill has moved off SportsCenter 6 to the undefeated, and Chad, I don't remember if we talked about this. If this happened during the course of one of our news cycles, Rob and Jimmy have not. Jimmy, I'll start with you. You know, I can't sort of like report and say this enough from talking to multiple sources, from Jamele Hill being on the record, from Norby Williamson, the executive of SportsCenter, being on the record. I wholeheartedly believe that she asked to leave SportsCenter and that she was not fired from SportsCenter.
Why won't you report the truth, Richard?
Right. Wrote in October that it was very clear that Jamele Hill was not happy on this show and that they were eventually going to lead to a line in the sand where the show was no longer what she and Michael Smith basically had composed in terms of post his and hers. And inevitably, she was going to – I thought she'd leave ESPN. She hasn't done that yet, but there was no doubt in my mind that it was going to end on SportsCenter. So, Jimmy, top-line thoughts on just Jamele Hill leaving SportsCenter 6, now heading to the undefeated, and even the sort of the larger subtext of people continuing to push out there that she was somehow fired, which is kind of crazy in that you would fire Jamele Hill, but you would keep Michael Smith on if you didn't like the ratings?
Well, that was my point to you, I think, the last week. But here's the other thing. Let's say – okay, I mean, for some reason you have this thing where you refuse to report the truth.
Right, but we know that.
Let's say she was fired, hypothetically, okay? Okay, so she was fired. She still works at ESPN, so is that really, are people considered, people just want a victory, so they want to say she was fired. But even if she was fired, what difference does it make? She still has a job at ESPN. She's still going to do, clearly she's in a better role, I think, because I think the potential for her to get in trouble at ESPN was much higher if she was on SportsCenter.
Agreed, 100%.
So she's going to the undefeated. I think she has a little more leeway to do things she wants, and it's a good move for her. And I think if ESPN was smart, they would, you know, keep her out there, keep her face out there, keep using her on things.
Well, they will. They've said that she'll be on OTL. She'll still be on SportsCenter. She'll do the ride home around the horn, PTI kind of stuff.
I think the most interesting thing, I said this last week, I was surprised that the reason, even if you're a conspiracy theorist who believes she was fired, why would they fire her and keep Michael Smith, number one? And number two,
right?
I mean, what is this nonsense now about Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann coming back to the 6 o'clock SportsCenter?
Yeah, it's the age.
You're the top media reporter in the country. Break it down.
I would say that's an agent looking to get some leverage. Would be my guess. I don't believe that it's going to happen. All right, Rob, let me go to you. Because I would imagine that your feed – when it came to Jamele Hill was an absolute shit show, if we can now get the explicit tag on this podcast. You know, because I remember when this was my story basically saying that she was off SC6, and I think even Jimmy was sort of mocking me that day, basically like, your mentions are an absolute shit show, which they were. I mean,
because you won't report the truth,
right,
that she was fired.
Right. The from, you know, the mild stuff to just absolute just racism floating on my timeline, which gave me, I guess, one sliver of a sense of what it must be like for people of color in high profile positions like Jamele, what they get every day. So from your end, Rob, how did you, I know you wrote about this and I know you have your take, how did you see all this, basically both Jamele moving from SC6 to the undefeated and then the wave, the social media after effect of everybody basically trying to figure out what did or what did not happen?
Well, you know, here's what happened in from what I've been told, without you know implicating the guilty, is that, you know, SportsCenter or SC6 or whatever you want to call it, they wanted this urban market, they wanted this social media, they wanted the vibe that Jamele and Michael had on his and hers. They wanted that, you know, for SportsCenter. What they didn't expect was the pushback from the MAGA ESPN people, the traditional or conservative or whatever you want to call them. And when that happened, you know, they panicked. And what they tried to do is they tried to turn Michael and Jamele into something more traditional. And this is not a knock on Michael Smith. I'm just saying that he maybe a little bit more. I won't say he was, you know, for it, but you know, Jamel had stronger feelings about things that were going on in society. And what happened was a dream job became a nightmare. And I can say, and like you said, you report the truth. I know that this was her decision. Now, would it had if she didn't come to them at some point, would they had made it on their own? Probably.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, it wasn't going to last for a long time in the way it was. It, like you said, it was a line in the sand. So she was proactive. And that's good, because if you make your own decisions and you come to them, it makes it easier on everyone. In essence, she made it easier on ESPN, because if they would have said, hey, we're taking her off the air, she's doing this, we're firing her, it would have been a whole lot, you know, worse. And now she's in a position where she wants to talk about social issues. She wants to talk about things that happen to people of color. She wants to talk about politics. And she can do that now. And people, that audience that is like, we need to get her off of the air, they're not reading The Undefeated. You know what I'm saying? They're not doing that. So I think the pushback is going to be less, and it's going to allow her to do more of what she wants to do. And it's going to allow Michael to not be in that uncomfortable situation. You know, hey, because if you don't want to be Michael Smith, say, hey, well, you're not supporting Jamel Hill, or you're a sellout, or you're Uncle Tom. You know, so he was in a tough spot. And I think this allows him now to not have to worry about that. It was a win-win for everyone. But I think what you see, and it's a product of society, is that when these things happen, I think they were concerned about the reactions. That's why they gave so many, you know, comments on the record and did the press release to say, hey, this was Jamel's, you know, decision, because they knew how it was going to be reacted to. And it's just where we're at as a society is like, we're either on this side or you're on this side, and nobody's being nice. And I don't want to say some of the things that I saw on my timeline, but they were horrific. And you know, to see that and see what Jamel has to go through on a daily basis, and what other people of color who decide to speak up about social issues, who work in sports media, what they deal with on a daily basis, is disheartening to me. So I think she's a very strong woman. I think her time at ESPN for now is going to be well spent. But this is not a story that's going to be over at this point. There's going to be some more twists and turns to it as we go along.
That was well said. I appreciate that take. Chad, one of the things as we head forward, and again, you used to work with Michael Smith at the Globe now, is what kind of what kind of viewership numbers SC6 is going to get with Smith as a solo host? And it's going back clearly to the more traditional elements of SportsCenter. They were making those changes when Jamel Hill and Michael Smith were there. They were bringing in they were doing stuff like what traditional SportsCenter would do, would be to sort of preview the 7 o'clock games. They were bringing on people who work at ESPN for them to interview. There were, they were trying to get basically also people with different viewpoints, Will Cain and people like that, to come on that show. So that, the larger point is that show is going to be more of what we think of as a traditional SportsCenter. I've said this. My God, I can't. It hurts my head how many times I've said this. The 6 p.m. SportsCenter is never going to. There's no turnaround on the viewership. The world has changed. It is a terrible spot for SportsCenter in terms of destination viewing, because the whole—
I think it would with Patrick and Overman, though. Just
you do?
For record.
Okay, yeah. The whole world—
No, I'm being dead too. You don't think ratings would go up a little?
No. Wow. I think they would go up in the short term, but no, I think eventually they would continue to fall. The 6 p.m. SportsCenter as a time slot is dead.
I agree with that, but I'm saying if you put in Patrick and Overman, their rating would go up from what it is now.
I think as a curiosity play over like 6 months, yes, but like long term, no chance.
Okay,
even with Patrick and Overman. Although I concede,
well, Keith has gone off. You know, he's gone off.
I concede to you that there would be a long term curiosity factor, but I don't think there again. And Chad and I know we've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Like the 6 p.m. SportsCenter is a dead zone because if you are on social media, you already know what's happened, and you're not necessarily rushing home to get the SportsCenter preview of a game. So
I agree.
You know what I mean? So what is unique about that slot? So Chad, getting after Jimmy tried to throw water on my premise here. After what do you think of Michael Smith as a solo host, and can he keep the ratings of viewership flat? Or I feel for the guy. I shouldn't say I feel for the guy. He's making millions of dollars. Let's not go crazy. But I think that spot is just an impossibility heading forward with changing habits, with social media. It's just, it's not a destination viewing point anymore for SportsCenter.
Yeah, I mean, Michael's one of the people I most respect in this business. I worked with him when he was young, and I was pretty new at the Globe, and he treats people really well. And one of the ways that manifests itself is he's really good with other people in whatever media he's working in. He hit it off with, I mean, he was friends with Jamel for a long time, but their His and Hers podcast is really sort of the genesis of putting them on SportsCenter. He's good at banter. He's good at having a sort of warm, friendly conversation or even debate with whoever he's with. He needs somebody else. And I would be surprised, even with the money that he surely makes, that being a solo SportsCenter anchor probably wasn't something that he's really aspired to. I think he probably has different things in mind for his career. So curious how long it goes on and what the, how it plays out when his contract is eventually up. But I guess they're going to continue down this path for now with him. I'm kind of surprised they didn't try to shoehorn Mike Greenberg in maybe as his co-host for a while or something like that, just to promote somebody they actually want to promote.
But, what? I mean,
it's a weird situation for Michael. This, I don't think this is really who he is. And nowadays, I don't know a lot of people that see SportsCenter as something that is their destination, their ideal goal for their career.
You know, and something, and to speak to Rob, and by the way, Rob hit it on the head exactly in terms of trying to sort of appeal, I think, when they brought Jamel and Michael in to bring in more people of color under the tent to view, to try to get, for lack of a better phrase, an urban view to SportsCenter, whether, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, if that's the phraseology. And now if you're Michael Smith, you know, your partner is gone. What they brought you in to do, and if you read that press release from January, February, where they basically were touting how we want the individualism of all our SportsCenter anchors to shine on SportsCenter, which they changed 5 months later into this homogenized SportsCenter. You know, you wonder, Chad, where he could go, just in terms of where he could take that show. I wish him luck. I hope he gets viewership. I just, you know, whether it's Michael Smith, you know, Michael Jordan, or Winston Churchill, the rating's gone, in my opinion. I just don't think it's coming back. Go ahead, Rob.
I just want to say I totally agree with Chad. Michael Smith is one of the nicest guys that I've ever met in media. No one has a bad word to say about Michael Smith. And like you said, he's handled this stuff with Jamel beautifully.
I agree.
You know, from someone that works at ESPN to being a good friend of Jamel, and he's so talented. You just hope that they find the right spot, you know, for him, and that kind of this backlash of everything else that has happened, you know, doesn't have a long term effect on him.
Yeah, as long as the checks are cashing. I'm rooting for Michael, at least in that way. All right, Jimmy, two more topics here. ESPN, as Chad brought up, ESPN gave Mike Greenberg the cherished post-Super Bowl SportsCenter slot with, I didn't watch a ton of it, but I saw Steve Levy, I saw Greenberg, I saw Lewis Riddick, who I think is far and away ESPN's best NFL analyst. I might have saw Ryan Clark on there. But the larger point is, because there's no Mike and Mike radio show anymore, you have to get this guy on air to give him visibility prior to this April launch of what is a major, major show for ESPN, their morning show. It is it's interesting because it's you know, he's going to be off the air for a long time, at least on a day to day, prior to him doing this show come April. And this show come April is huge for them. They're investing a lot of money in this morning show, and I think, as we've talked about on this podcast many times, I don't think it's going to hit at all.
Listen, I don't know why this is, because normally I don't have a problem ripping people. I get very uncomfortable talking about Mike Greenberg because I've never met him, and I'm sure he's the nicest guy in the world. I'm sure he has never even, like, you know, stepped on an ant. But you can't have less personality. You just can't. I mean, the guy did a morning radio show for 20 years. I dare you to tell me one memorable thing from it. I dare you.
I mean, you know, are you asking me to come up with memorable
just
stuff?
Just one. One thing he said in 20 years. And now they're going to bank out an entire morning show on him. I feel bad because I'm sure he's a nice guy. You know, and you want me to, I know, watch the first show and review it. I mean, I'm going to fall asleep. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Well, then just take a video of you falling asleep. We'll get some page views on that.
There you go. I honestly don't know what. Listen, if ESPN's going to invest this,
it's not just Greenberg. It's Greenberg, Jalen Rose, Michelle Beto, most likely Damian Woody, and then obviously some other people floating through.
I don't know what to say. All I know is this. The question you asked, yes, if I was ESPN, I would put him on every show they have because they're going to bank their 7 to 10 morning slot on him. So you need to get him out there. You need to give him exposure. I do think it's very – I mean, this is a little off the beat here, so if you don't want to go there, that's fine. I think it's very strange that ESPN has an NFL team for the whole season, and then it's Mike Greenberg and Chris Berman on the biggest night of the year. I mean, if I was someone who worked there all year
– if you were Sam Ponder, you'd be pissed off.
Yeah, I would be.
I agree. I listen, ESPN made that decision for obviously marketing reasons, but I think it's a slap in the face.
It is.
You do – this is what the you know, and understandably so, the countdown crew used to get so pissed off because they would do the whole NBA season, and then come the NBA Finals, it's Stephen A. Smith, Michael Wilbon, and 500 other people coming in, and the countdown crew doesn't get there. I'm
not,
with you on
and
that.
And it's not one person. They brought in Berman and Mike Greenberg.
I know. I'm with you on that.
Was SVP on last night?
I didn't see.
Like, I saw Steve Levy and Greenberg for a second in between, you know, flipping around in between commercials on This Is Us here, and I'm like, where's SVP? Isn't he supposed to have the Midnight Sports Center?
I don't know. Rob, by the way, you're based in Los Angeles, right, Rob?
Yes.
Are you counting down the days to the Mike Greenberg morning show? Do you have like a calendar somewhere where you're marking the days off?
You know, Mike Greenberg to me is Roman Reigns.
I will not stand for that Roman Reigns blasphemy. Apologize, please.
He's a decent enough guy.
That's an insult.
He worked hard, I assume. But he's being pushed. It's not Mike Greenberg. It's ESPN's fault. They've made this decision to push Mike Greenberg in everybody's face. You're going to love him on TV, blah, blah, blah. And it's not connecting. Hopefully, you know, Beto and Jalen Rose can help him. That's why they're bringing all these people on. What happens when you have a singular guy that you push out there and it doesn't work? You add him to a group
right.
of people and then hope, you know, this is not working. Let's add someone. Let's put him in a faction. Let's put him in the Shield. Let's put him in, you know, the Four Horsemen.
Listen, Rob, I love the fact that you brought Roman Reigns in here. You know that Train and I are huge wrestling fans, but Mike Greenberg to me is more Jason Jordan than Roman Reigns because they're trying to put, because at least Roman, I feel like, has gotten over at times.
That is the most vicious thing you've ever said, and I feel a new bond with you, Richard.
Do you agree though?
I'm going to retweet your column now.
Is trying to push Jason Jordan, who really has done nothing. At least Roman Reigns, I feel like, from The Shield, he's a good performer.
It's unfair to say Greenberg's done nothing. He did host a radio show for 20 years.
That's why I called him Roman Reigns. Greenberg, you know Mike Greenberg.
That's true. He's been around.
He's done stuff.
Right.
It's just the push just doesn't really make any sense, you know, of how it's been pushed. All this stuff should be organic.
Like, I totally agree.
We like these guys. Right. This is who we're going to push. This is why. And ESPN seems to be like Vince McMahon at times. It says, hey, it doesn't matter what you think, the fans or the viewers. We're going to do this, and you're going to like it regardless because, hey, we're ESPN. Where else are you going to go?
It's a phenomenal analogy.
It is. Rob is correct in the push.
But I don't like the besmirching of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, and I think because I like Roman Reigns a lot, I'm not happy with Rob. But the push part is right. Now I'm just going through my mind, like, who else has gotten that kind of push because the WWE wanted him? And you know, and then you got to bring in other people.
The Big Show, Kane.
I think Kane was the better Mike Greenberg analogy.
He's been around forever.
Right.
He's never really.
Kane is a good one.
That is good.
All right. Thank you.
Never has really gotten over the way like The Undertaker and others have gotten over.
Right.
They
use him because they know he's going to get the job done. He's not going to be bad, but he's never great. You know.
I would still say Kane has more. I would bet on Kane hosting the ESPN morning show.
At least Roman Reigns has heat. I mean, you know.
Chad, do you have any idea what we're talking about on this, or is this all unfamiliar to you?
I just figured out in the last 10 seconds it was about wrestling.
All right, Chad, we will go to you. We'll finish up on this. I love the fact that we got a little wrestling in here.
I can tell.
Chad, Fox getting Thursday Night Football. Not surprising at all. But it's very interesting in that they outbid, far and away they outbid, if you believe O-RAN's reporting, and I do, CBS and NBC. I also got the impression CBS and NBC were not particularly unhappy so much about losing it, but the commitment here is what's the interesting story. Fox commits 5 years to Thursday Night Football. they're doing this because they're basically giving up on their scripted programming and they're using the NFL to try to win a night, which they're going to. But it's interesting, Chad, in that I guess I would ask you, it will go this way. The NFL's had a great relationship with Fox. And do you think there's any way that Fox can somehow get the NFL to maybe give them a little bit of a better schedule to make that package a little sexier? It drew 14, 13 million viewers last year, which, again, would be the number two show on television on a series basis. But yeah. I think we'd all agree Thursday Night Football doesn't – it never feels like Sunday Night Football. It never feels like the 4 o'clock game on the back end of the doubleheader. It always feels like a little bit of an oversaturation play.
Yeah, it feels like the JV warm-up for the weekend varsity. I'm always shocked when you see it's the number two program. That might be the greatest evidence yet that the NFL is indeed not dying. Probably the ratings last night with the Eagles and Chris Long, Malcolm Jenkins, the most outspoken forward-thinking team in the NFL, not having people turn off the televisions like they claim they're going to do for the protests. That's also a pretty strong sign, but Fox was really sort of fawning over this deal when it came down last week. They went out of their way to say that the original NFL contract with Fox, I think it was in 1993 when they got the NFC package, built the networks, created our network. We would not have Fox in all its incarnations without the NFL's help. And it was almost sort of, you know, that always happens in a deal like this, but this one was pandering to the league a little bit more than you usually see anywhere else. You didn't see this from CBS and NBC when they got their Thursday night deals. So it made me think that they're trying to get a little bit more out of this than just the Thursday night package in itself, whether it's better games, whether it's better promotion of the games, some other variable that we're not thinking about. But it's clear that Fox really, really wanted this and really seems to believe that there might be, or is kind of carrying stuff like there might be more than they're letting on right now. It's interesting, NBC's media availability for the Super Bowl, they have the little dog and pony red carpet show with all their talent, was the day that this story broke. But before it had broken, I think Arian got it out late that night, and it was up early the next morning. And Mark Lazarus was sitting at the table at the NBC availability, and I wasn't talking to him. I was talking to Fred, but I heard another reporter ask him, you know, where do we stand on the Thursday night? Is NBC going to be back in this? And he said, he's kind of shrugged and looked a little pained and said, yeah, I think you'll be hearing some news on that pretty soon. So I took that, you know, my instincts were horrible on that. I took that to mean that they were going to get it back. But it was pretty clear. I think NBC and CBS were already well aware at that point that they weren't keeping it.
I'm going to feel dirty doing this, but I'm going to defend the NFL for just a second. Okay. I do think it's tough. It's tough to knock them for the schedule because you just don't know. Outside of the Patriots, you have no idea who's going to be good every year. I mean, before the season, you would have said, oh, okay, let's load up on the Packers in primetime. Rodgers gets hurt, and then they were unwatchable for the last, you know, 8 to 10 weeks of the season. So I think what you need more than the schedule before the season is some flexibility, and I don't know how you do that on a Thursday night game. You know, they have it with the Sunday night game the last, what, 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season. I don't know. I don't think you can do that on a Thursday when, you know, the players already only have 3 days rest. You're not going to be able to do anything with flexibility there. So I would rip the NFL if I could. But I think knocking them for the scheduling and giving this network a better game, I think that's a lot of luck more than anything.
Well, you always sort of have to get some luck. You know, there was a lot of you needed the Raiders to be great this year because how many primetime games
they
were on.
They were great last year, and then
right. You know, the only thing I say is I wonder if like maybe somehow the NFL gives them a Cowboys game, an extra Cowboys game, because that can obviously game
right,
change.
Even when they're bad, people are going
to
watch
it. Yeah, it could sort of game change the rate. You know, the one thing I and Rob, we'll let you weigh in on this a second. The one thing that I think would actually be great for Thursday Night Football is like the thing they're considering about giving, you know, giving days off on both the back end and the front end. I think then if you can get like 10 days sort of off for these guys prior to playing Thursday, I think you could get some better product. Rob, how did you just see Fox getting Thursday Night Football? And, you know, to me, when people say that Thursday Night Football is going to go away, it's ludicrous. The NFL will never give up that money. And two, ultimately, I think Jimmy hit on this a little bit too, is like there's just so many windows, and if there's not enough great teams and great quarterbacks, you're never going to just – you're not going to maybe have great games.
Well, you know, I kind of look at it from a little bit different perspective. What the kids say these days is secure the bag, which means, you know, get as much money as you possibly can while you can get it. And I think that's the NFL mentality on everything. And the players complain about it. The players complain about a lot of things that have to do with the NFL. So what's going to happen when that CBA comes up? Are they going to say, hey, you guys are, you know, quote unquote, putting us at injury risk, quote unquote, you know, putting us at concussion risk. You're making all of this money from these networks. You're making all these monies from the whatever, these different revenue streams. But then I can see the seventh man on the Brooklyn Nets making more than Le'Veon Bell. You know what I mean? So, like, to me, it's like I get what the NFL is doing. It's a business. You're trying to make as much money as possible, and people are indeed watching. But if you're a player and you're concerned about this, are you ever going to, you know, fight back? I mean, a union just seems soft to me. And it can, with all the money that's coming in and all the things that 100 million people watch the Super Bowl, just feel like they should have more say and better contracts about a better, you know, just better communication of what is going on in the league, considering that, you know, every time they go out on that field, potentially they're taking years off of their lives and putting their brains in jeopardy. So that's the part that kind of wows me. It's like the NFL's like, yeah, oh, $600 million, blah, I take it, you know, but we don't care anything, you know, about the players. And now how that comes about with the new CBA, I'll be really curious to see that, because I think that their eyes are starting to be open to some of these things that the NFL are doing.
Yeah, I mean, when Roger Goodell comes out and says that the injury rate of Thursday Night Football, you know, it's been the same, you know, this year versus last year. I mean, it's all totally bogus.
And every player hates it.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly, as they should. You know, players, I heard this on Sportsnet 590, which was just really interesting. It was Luke Wilson, I think he's the Seahawks tight end, said that a lot of times players will not report injuries for the Thursday Night Football game because they want to get they don't want to be in the facility Friday and Saturday, so they'll just basically take off. So you don't really ever get a true sense of how many people were hurt on a Thursday game.
It's not an issue where, like, maybe there's some players who don't mind it or a couple here. Every player hates it.
Right. I've not heard anybody who's sort of said this. By the way, to speak to Rob's point, that would be either Damari Carroll or Joe Harris as the seventh player on the Brooklyn Nets. So we'll see if we can check out their salary contract. All right. Is there anything else that you guys would like to talk about before we get out of here? I know you guys are – when are you guys flying back, Chad and Rob?
I need to get out. I'm leaving as soon as we finish. My flight's in like 2 hours, but I'm right now to the airport. But one last thing I want to say,
sure,
and I get out of here. This is to all of the media people that complained that it was too cold, or it was this, it was that. You guys are soft. Media people are the softest people that I've ever met in my life. Maybe because I'm an independent. I don't know. Somebody called it media privilege. But whatever it is, you guys are soft, man. Maybe because I had to work. I had to start from the bottom to get to the Super Bowl. Maybe I'm a little more, you know, aware, a little more humble that, you know, hey, we're going to this game that people pay $3,000 to get to, that some people, you know, how many Eagles fans couldn't afford to go to the Super Bowl, been waiting on this all their life? And, you know, we walk in there, you know, for free, and they give us hot dogs, you know, for nothing. We don't even have to pay concessions. You guys are soft. It was cold. Put a coat on. Put a hat on. Stop complaining about where you're sitting, how you're getting in. You know, oh, you have to stand outside for 2 minutes before the media shuttle because you don't have to pay for transportation, you know, comes in. You know, oh, my God, I got a double bed in my hotel. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? Why don't I have the deluxe suite? Soft. You guys are soft. Stop being babies on social media. It's really annoying to me. We have the best jobs in the world. We're not heart surgeons. We're not cops. We're not firemen. We're not first responders. We write about sports, and a lot of times we're 100% wrong in the stuff that we write about, and we get paid for it. Stop being babies.
Oh, you're Rob.
Sorry.
Get that rant off. There's nothing worse. There is nothing seriously worse than Olympic media writers complaining about the conditions. That to me, having covered seven of them, that is the worst of all time. At the same time, SI's pretty much hooked us up pretty nicely, so I got nothing to complain about. Jimmy, what are you going to say?
I think sports writers fawning with their obsession over Bruce Springsteen is still the worst thing about sports.
It's a little
writers.
Rough. Yeah, I can't take that. Yeah, that's sort of as annoying as Mushnick going after rappers to me. It's the same. It's on the parallel annoyance scale.
Phil, with no complaints about Pink and Justin Timberlake today, I wonder why.
Oof. Let's pick that up at another time. All right. The guests have been.
Wait.
Go ahead.
You can't go through this whole podcast without mentioning the fact that ESPN didn't have a Super Bowl party, and I know that's a big thing with you.
They did not have. Yeah. Well, they did not. I can tell you why. They did not have a Super Bowl party to pay, I believe, for Kendrick Lamar performing at the College Football Championship.
Now, what do you
think? That is what I was told from my ESPN sources.
What do you think of that?
I think Kendrick's awesome, so I think – I always think – I would say this about SI.
But
I,
it took away, like, your annual tweet
it take,
about,
took away
oh,
my joke.
I feel bad for the PA who didn't get invited to the Super Bowl.
Well, Jim, I only do that because it
– You martyr yourself.
It's not a martyr thing. It's inevitably, if I tweet that out, I usually get a source who's pissed off at ESPN direct messaging me saying they've never invited me, so let me tell you about this. All right. Let us move on with the goodbyes. Chad Finn is the sports media writer and general columnist for the Boston Globe. Rob Littal is the founder and editor of Black Sports Online. Rob, did I get your last name? Did I pronounce it right every time, I hope?
You surely did. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Jimmy Train, of course, is Sports Illustrated's chief media writer and also writes Traina Thoughts every day.
All about Chris Collinsworth's terrible performance today.
Right. That is correct. That's Jimmy's column. Prior to this podcast, let us just go down the quick guest list. The last guest podcast we had was Paula Levine, who is the ESPN investigative reporter who reported on Michigan State and Larry Nassar. Peter King was part of that podcast as well. Before that, Fred Gadelli and Drew Eskoff, the producer and director of the Super Bowl. Before that, Jim Nantz on Tony Romo, the Masters, and his career. And then before that, a 58-minute interview with Jemele Hill. That was right before she made her move. Probably interesting to listen to that. Today, I want to thank Jamie Lasante for filling in for Lou Pellegrino on this podcast. Thank you to Sports Illustrated, and thank you to Cadence 13. Thanks to Chad, Jimmy, and Rob. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.